You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
With the long-delayed opening of the City Rail Link due to open later this year, and the government relaunching their Roads of National Significance policies, eyes have turned to a perennial problem. Why do we spend more than any other OECD nation on infrastructure, yet receive far less bang for buck? To answer these questions, the government asked the Infrastructure Commission to write a plan that could be the basis for a bipartisan infrastructure pipeline, the National Infrastructure Plan, to give us steady development and perspective on our infrastructure needs and issues. And this week, the Employment Relations Amendment Bill under ACT MP Brooke Van Velden has reached its final reading before being put into law. It is set to overhaul our employment system. Supporters say it will make it easier for contractors to get the arrangements that they want and will increase work. Critics say it will push workers into more precarious positions with less protections from exploitation. For this week's catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke to MP Ricardo Menendez March about the National Infrastructure Plan and the Employment Relations Amendment Bill. Kia ora, Ricardo.
Morena, thank you for having me.
I want to start us off today by talking about the National Infrastructure Plan. There's been a long discussion about the problems that New Zealand has had in infrastructure, and these have only been made worse with the recent floodings. How do you feel about this current plan? Is it enough?
Ironically, there's a lot we actually agree with the plan, and a lot of this talks about how government debt, which works very different from household debt, could be used to invest in actual useful things like modern infrastructure, as opposed to, for example, tax cuts that mostly benefit wealthier people, so that we can invest in things like inter-regional rail that gives us a more resilient transport network and a more resilient economy, so that we can invest on adequate public housing, so that we can invest in a state-planned manufacturing industry. And so we agree with a lot of the stuff in the report. Ironically, the government is doing the opposite of what the report says, which is to invest in things like the LNG plant that will cost $1 billion and will not particularly be useful for the economy compared to other types of investments.
Another thing I've seen some people criticize the government for in relation to not sticking to a plan like this is the Roads of National Significance. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, look, yes, absolutely, and that these are massively expensive roading projects that a lot of the business cases don't really add up with the political rhetoric that we're hearing from politicians. This is why we've long called for better investment in things like inter-regional rail and intercity rail, so that we can have a proper rail passenger network like other modern cities are doing and already have. These kind of investments not only are more fiscally sustainable in the long term, they actually better help reduce congestion, and they also better support the transport of goods, which can better boost our economic productivity.
Is that something you hold true for all of these projects, or are there some roading projects that you think might be acceptable?
I think the large majority of projects the government hasn't made a particularly good case with. And what I am particularly concerned about is the government's playing with things like public-private partnerships for infrastructure projects, which historically in New Zealand have resulted in huge cost blowouts. And we end up also devolving our infrastructure, effectively like the maintenance of it, et cetera, and the running of operations to private companies as well, which is problematic.
Speaking of how we run these infrastructure and how we manage it, as you said, there's a huge bill associated with this infrastructure plan. It's not really a plan in the sense that it's laid out. It's more that it's estimated to be within the $100 to $200 billion range. How might New Zealand pay for this?
Well, one of the things that we've got to acknowledge is that the government has often talked about government debt as if it was like your credit card debt, and that's not how government debt functions. Compared to our GDP, our debt, and compared to other developed countries, it's actually still relatively low in relationship to our size of the economy, et cetera, as a proportion of our economy. And what this tells us and what experts have been telling us is that there's still plenty of room to better invest in more productive infrastructure that actually allows us to have a more productive economy, which in turn allows us to pay that debt faster. And a lot of that will also, for us, be about making sure that we overhaul the tax system so that everyday people pay less and the wealthy few who are making huge bucks at a time of a cost of living crisis pay their adequate share of tax.
Now, a big reason that people have pointed to the need for a plan like this is that New Zealand spends more on infrastructure per capita than other countries whilst also receiving less. Now, a large component of that is that we're in an isolated part of the world, we can't draw on other people's industries as easily, and we are a small population with a large landmass. But are there other reasons, perhaps, that it might also cost a lot of money to build here?
A large part of that, well, it's also the types of infrastructure projects we choose to build. Right? Like, I mean, the roading, the huge roading projects that do not necessarily result in lower traffic is a great example of that. I mean, look, just take the lead off a lot of American cities that just told us time and time again that all we need is one more lane. They've spent billions and billions on building these lanes, and then they're still congested and people are spending more time in traffic getting to work and to school. This is why we need to invest in more productive infrastructure. Like, well, I go back to the issue around rail. I think that's a really good example. The other thing is that also our government has decimated our manufacturing industries, and we're basically deindustrializing. I think there's a huge potential for the state to take a more active role in planning the economy and, for example, making sure that we can manufacture raw wood products that we end up exporting to basically get processed overseas to then import them back for things like building housing or other infrastructure projects. And so investing in our manufacturing industry so that we can actually have a more productive economy will make the building of infrastructure also cheaper.
All right, I want to move on now to talking about the Employment Relations Amendment Bill that has been debated for a final time. For our listeners that do not know much about the bill, could you give us your understanding of it?
Yeah, so it's a terrible bill that basically in large parts copy-pasted the talking points of Uber, a massive multinational many people will be familiar about that takes its profits offshore and do not treat its users particularly well, as has been documented by the Uber drivers themselves. And the bill effectively creates a new class of contractor. And once you're classified as that type of contractor, you're not adequately protected by minimum entitlements like sick leave, like minimum wage, holidays, etc. And it makes it almost impossible for you to challenge that status in the courts like the Uber drivers tried to do and won. Other things that the bill does is that it effectively also does not allow people to be automatically covered by what we call a collective agreement. That is something that union members bargain for and win, that secures better wages, better health and safety conditions, better security of hours. Anyone who's worked in retail and hospital will be familiar with some of that those precarious conditions when it comes to security of hours or, for example, low wages. And this bill has been touted as making it easier to hire people, but we know that's not true. All it will do is actually reduce wages. It will reduce working rights for everyday people. And it, for example, in the case of Uber, it will continue allowing Uber to make huge bucks, paying no tax and treating the drivers in a really poorly way, as they have documented in the court, where they are exposed to really unsafe conditions and do not have any adequate entitlements when they're sick that allows them to live well.
Could you go over with us the ways that it undermines the union membership?
Well, the fact that, for example, people are not covered by a collective agreement when they start their work does not allow people to see the benefits of being part of a union. Collective agreements are won by union members and organizers to secure literally better wages often, better working conditions, security of hours, greater health and safety in your workplace, which is really important if you're working, say, for example, in areas like construction or security. And being automatically included in the collective agreement for those 30 days allows you to see the benefits of that work that was secured by everyday workers. Without that, it effectively also creates a lesser incentive and the conditions for people to join their union and be part of it, but also to see the benefits of being part of a union. all this does is to gut the working conditions of everyday people in the sake of the for the sake of the gig economy, which the government promised us is going to be amazing for everyday people. But we're seeing more and more that many corporations are using the so-called gig economy to lower working conditions for everyday people, and Uber is a prime example of that.
How would people be classified into this new tier of contractor? Is this something that would be happening from the outset in the contract you organize with your employer, or is it something more about the type of work you're doing?
Well, the part of the problem is that normally you would think that whether you're a contractor or an employee would be about the type of work that you do and how you do that work. But now it's basically being shifted to the type of agreement your employer basically offers you. And once you sign it up, it makes it, like, they've changed basically the law to make it impossible to, effectively impossible to challenge that. Not everybody will necessarily immediately transition to that, but what we will likely see is employers that are not trying to act in good faith, trying to now shift into turning more of their workers into these contractors, effectively, and this type of contractors, that will then mean they won't have to offer them the same type of security that they would have done if they had been an employee.
And I'm going to have to leave you soon, but just before we do, there's been news on New Zealand First potentially proposing a referendum on the Māori electorates this electoral cycle. Can I just get your first and final thoughts on it?
Well, the Green Party has a bill to entrench the Māori seats, because this is a small way in which we could actually honour Te Tiriti. But more than anything, it speaks of New Zealand First's complete focus on attacking Māori, attacking migrants, and doing actually nothing to address the cost of living crisis, doing nothing to actually support lowering house prices and rents. You know, they would rather introduce a bill that makes English the official language and to try and fight in a referendum of Māori seats than on actually improving wages for everyday people. This shows that they're on the side of the wealthy few that would rather keep us distracted and fighting each other as opposed to actually improving material conditions for everyday workers, which is what the Greens will be fighting for this election.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March on the National Infrastructure Plan released by the Infrastructure Commission as part of their push to create a steady pipeline of works, and the Employment Relations Amendment Bill, changing the landscape of our employment.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.